horizon problem, which I think you guys have already been introduced to by Hiranya and also probably Niyesh. But what we are going to do is we are going to study in some depth, and we are going to compute the, so first we'll study what is a horizon problem, and then we'll look at one of its solution. So what I'll show you here today is just one of the solutions of the horizon problem, which comes from inflation. But one can always have a theory which doesn't have inflation, and one can get rid of this problem. We are not going to study these such theories during this week, but maybe if you want, like, we can talk about them later. So what I'll just want to say is that there is only in the way the inflation solves this problem. So before we look at the horizon problem, let me just introduce to you what is a co-moving horizon. So have you people studied co-moving horizon earlier? It's very similar to particle horizon, but let me show it what it is, okay? And then, so maybe like some of the things you have studied earlier. Okay, so but before we go to the co-moving horizon, let us see that suppose if we have two points, x1 and x2, and we want to, and they are on the co-moving grid, then the distance between the two points on the co-moving grid, these are the two vectors, is basically d as some x1 minus x2 square plus y1 minus y2 square plus z1 minus z2 square. So the idea is that if you have an expanding universe and if you have two points in this expanding universe, you get rid of the scale factor, and then this is the distance, co-moving distance between the two points. And now let us consider the Friedman-Robertson-Walker metric, and for the flat universe, which is dA square minus dt square plus a square and dx square. Like if I put a bar without an arrow, it means a vector. Okay. And then we want to consider the co-moving distance traveled by light. Traveled by light rays. And that is when, so since these are the null vectors, the co-moving distance traveled by the light rays will be obtained by putting ds square equal to 0. And that will be the distance dx. And that dx will be essentially dt by a. A of t. So infinitesimal distance traveled by, yeah. Let us call it some other thing, delta.
Okay.
Okay. That's not the same d here. Okay. So this is the infinitesimal distance traveled, the co-moving distance. And from here, one can define the total co-moving distance traveled by light rays. And that is what we'll call eta, which is also our co-moving horizon. And if you have studied conformal time earlier, this is also a conformal time. This is the conformal time. Conformal time is same as the co-moving horizon. Dt prime, at prime. Okay? This is the definition of the co-moving horizon. So if there are two particles, let us say in the universe, which are separated by a distance greater than eta, then they have never been in causal contact. Okay? And if there are two particles which have ever been in causal contact, that means they are in the co-moving horizon. That is the significance of this quantity. It is same as conformal time, like if you have studied conformal time earlier. So now let us study this conformal, this co-moving horizon. Yeah.
When do we introduce this concept instead of just putting stuff in a metric and seeing if we're kind of like or different?
Because we want to study, it will become clear why we are studying this. Because the horizon problem is related to the distances or the total distances which light could have traveled ever in the universe. Okay, so we will need to know a notion of distance scale, which can be the maximum distance which lights could have traveled. That is why we need this. Maybe your question is something else.
Awesome. Keep going on.
Yeah. Okay. We'll see. So now let us consider different matter components and the behavior of the behavior of eta. Okay. So we want to first study matter which satisfies strong energy condition. And the examples of this matter, let us take dust. So dust has W equal to 0. And now we can easily compute what is eta for dust. How does eta behave for dust? Okay. So to do that, let us first recall that if we integrate the Friedmann equation for a fixed equation of state or a constant equation of state, then A of t, A at some time t, is A naught at some scale corresponding to t naught. It's 2 by 3, 1 plus w. So if you take w equal to 0, that means that A goes as t to the power 2/3. And then we can put this A here in this eta, and then we can find out that eta after the integration goes as A to the power 1/2 for dust. So eta, the moving horizon for dust particles goes A to the power 1/2. That is the point. And now let us, another example is radiation, which also satisfies strong energy condition, where W is 1 by 3. And then, like, you can do this yourself, that A goes as, eta goes as A in this case. You can plug in 1 by 3 here and find out after the integration. Okay, so my claim is, which you can check for different cases, for matter which satisfies strong energy condition, that conformal time or the co-moving horizon will be always proportional to a positive power of the scale factor. You can check that. You can take any thing which satisfies. So strong energy condition is, remember that W, it should belong into this minus 1 by 3 is equal. So it belongs in this interval. So W can be 1. For matter which satisfies weak energy condition, or maybe let me not confuse you. So W goes from, W should be greater than minus 1 by 3. That is the point. So any matter which satisfies equation of state, which is greater than minus 1 by 3, will satisfy strong energy condition. So do you guys understand this inequality? The reason is if this is satisfied, if W is equal to minus 1 by 3, then rho plus 3p is 0. And that was the criteria for strong energy condition. Okay? So that is why W has to be greater than minus 1 by 3. So you can check yourself for your satisfaction that for any W which is greater than minus 1 by 3, conformal time will be always proportional to a positive power of scale factor. That is the important point. Now let us take matter which does not satisfy strong energy condition. And there, the result will be that conformal time is proportional to a negative power of scale factor. So to see that, let us consider some matter which has W as minus 2 by 3. This is one example, because the strong energy condition is violated for W less than minus 1 by 3. So let us take minus 2 by 3 as a simple example. Then one can show that A is proportional to T square, and eta is proportional to A to the power minus 1/2. So the main point here is that for matter which satisfies strong energy condition, the conformal time is proportional to the positive power of scale factor. For matter which violates strong energy condition, conformal time is proportional to a negative power of scale factor. So now what does it tell us, this behavior? So this behavior tells us that suppose you have a dust-filled universe, if our universe was actually dust-filled, and if we look backward towards smaller scale factors, then the co-moving horizon should be decreasing. Okay? Because co-moving horizon is proportional to a positive power of scale factor. So if A decreases, co-moving horizon decreases. If A increases, co-moving horizon increases. So if our universe is dust-filled, if it is assumed to be dust-filled, if it expands to larger scale factors, co-moving horizon will increase. If it contracts to smaller scale factors, co-moving horizon will decrease. Okay, that is the main point. Suppose if our universe is filled with matter which violates strong energy condition, which will happen for cosmological constant, which will happen for inflation, then if the universe will expand, co-moving horizon will decrease, and if the universe will contract, co-moving horizon will increase. So the co-moving horizon has this different behavior for matter which satisfies strong energy condition or not. Okay, so now let us consider co-moving wavelengths or the wavelengths. So do you guys, so if you consider wavelength of any photon in the universe, then do you guys know that, or have you done that lambda is proportional to the scale factor, the scaling of lambda? This has been derived, right? Because frequencies go as 1 over 8. So lambdas goes as 8. So if we want to construct, so this is a physical wavelength, but if we want to construct the co-moving wavelength, then we have to factor out with A. And the co-moving wavelength, lambda C, turns out to be constant. Because it depends on A, it's factored out by co-moving wavelengths are constant. So co-moving wavelengths do not change whether the universe expands or contracts. They remain same always. And now this is actually causes a problem which is called the horizon problem. So if we try to reconcile the fact that co-moving wavelengths do not change and the behavior of the co-moving horizon for matter which satisfies strong energy condition. The problem is that you consider any mode, any perturbation mode, mode of the perturbation in the present universe, and you look at its wavelength, then its co-moving wavelength is going to remain constant. Okay? But now if you assume that your universe is filled with dust, which is what people thought early on, let us say 20 years ago, then the co-moving horizon is actually going to decrease as scale factor decreases. So it means that you consider any mode, any arbitrary mode. You pick out any favorite mode. Its wavelength is fixed. It means that its wavelength was actually outside the co-moving horizon at some time in past when scale factor was decreasing for any arbitrary wavelength. Okay? So this is essentially the root of the horizon problem, which let me draw a plot and it will become more clear. So let us plot scale factor versus co-moving distance here. Okay. So the idea is that if I want to plot the horizon, the co-moving horizon, then the co-moving horizon for dust, it goes like this. If suppose we are here, then when it becomes radiation dominant, it goes like this. So it keeps on decreasing. This is the behavior of the co-moving horizon. So if I start with some, if I'm measuring some wavelength here, let us say, of some line lambda, some co-moving length lambda, then this was outside the co-moving horizon at some time in the past A. Okay? So if I start with any co-moving wavelength, then it will be always outside the horizon if this was the history of the universe. Now the problem, the horizon problem is essentially that the largest scales which we observe in cosmic microwave background, okay, they correspond to this time which occurred the largest scales which we observed, they entered the horizon somewhere here, let us say. And this is the time where the matter radiation decoupling occurred. Okay. And these larger scales which we observe in the CMB, they seem to be causally connected. And the mystery is that CMB is very isotropic. It has a very uniform temperature. And the problem is that how these larger scales, which entered the horizon after the matter radiation decoupling, were in the causal contact. Okay, this is essentially the horizon problem. So now let us look at how we can solve the problem.
Yeah. So we have this whole framework for GRF to measure. So if I look in my micro background, I see correlations between two points that look far away.
Yeah.
And I calculate the GR distance between the two, which is a non-trivial thing, because the metric changes with time and so on, and the integration is annoying. But say I do this.
But that is what we are doing.
So is this equivalent to what we're doing?
Exactly. If you assume that your metric, because you see, we are working with a conjecture, the homogeneity and isotropic principle, the homogeneity principle. So we are taking GR, we are asking that our universe be homogeneous, and then we are looking at the solutions of the Einstein field equations, which lead to those that homogeneity principle, and that is the Friedman-Robertson-Walker metric. And then everything follows from that. We are just doing GR here. You see, the problem is that sometimes people who do cosmology, they in some of the phases, you can do the same things with Newtonian cosmology. Okay, you get an answer which is good enough within some accuracies. So then people switch from GR to the Newtonian physics. But you should not get an impression that we are not doing GR here. We are doing full GR here. The Friedman equation and Rai-Chaudhuri equation are solutions of Einstein, they are the Einstein field equations for this metric. And we are actually measuring the distance, as you are saying, on a homogeneous background, not on the inhomogeneous background. If you assume a very inhomogeneous background, that is the perturbation is very large, then this analysis will not go through. We are assuming a homogeneous background, and this is the measurement of the same distance which you are talking about. Okay, so, but I think like this has been already done in the class, so I'm just revising at the moment. The main problem is that we have some modes which are outside the horizon, and we have to understand how these came into the causal contact. The point is that if these enter after the meta radiation decoupling, the modes don't talk to each other. They free stream with each other. So they cannot be in, they don't talk to each other. And before the meta radiation decoupling, they were outside the horizon. So they would have never talked to each other. Okay? So the horizon problem is essentially that the temperature in the CMB looks very isotropic, very uniform, even at the very large scales. And we don't understand why these large scales talk to each other. Like, how is the temperature so uniform? Yeah.
So, like, naively, you can construct ways for, like, conditions to be uniform around the universe without having communication. Like, you could just say, let's suppose, you know, the conditions, you know, as you approach the Big Bang, the conditions in the universe get closer and closer to homogeneous, because you might expect that if you want to pick some special beginning condition for the universe, it might as well be a maximally symmetric one.
Absolutely. You can do that.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but the problem is that such a condition will be extremely fine-tuned. So one of the biggest problems in cosmology is to understand the initial conditions of the universe. So if you have a theory in which there is a singularity, if you have a Big Bang singularity in the theory, then this problem actually becomes worse, because your GR equations are anyway expected to break down near the singularity, and you don't know like on what equations you are going to put the initial conditions. That's the first problem. Even if you assume GR is true, and we try to do what you are saying, then you will have to do extreme fine tuning, and that is not desirable.
Why is it undesirable? Or like, what criteria do you use for desirability?
The criteria which we use for desirability is that the physics should be generic. The answer should be generic. Like, irrespective of the initial condition you start with,
okay,
you should, in the future evolution, you should get qualitatively the same thing.
So you explicitly ask for the physics we see now to be independent of initial conditions?
Well, things cannot be really independent of the initial conditions, but they should not be strongly dependent on initial conditions. That is the thing. Yes?
Just thinking about this intuitively in terms of like thermodynamics, maybe this is the wrong way to think about it, but is that, can you explain why there's actually a problem that two things aren't causally connected? Because if I imagine like the air molecules in this room, you know, the one over there.
So they're outside they're outside their space-time cone.
But like if you think about, and I know the air molecules in this room are within, you know, light cones of each other, but if you think about one in that corner, one in that corner, there it's gonna take forever for them to ever meet up. They're really not gonna interact ever. So how are they,
not going to interact ever? The probability of interaction is not zero.
But like, they haven't interacted yet.
So they will interact?
At some point, they'll interact.
But yeah. The point is that if particles are outside the co-moving horizon, because the co-moving horizon goes from 0 to T, right? But they are never going to interact. If they are outside if these modes, for example, there is a mode here, let us say sitting here.
not here. Let us say the universe goes like this, and we are actually looking at this mode right here, which has not even entered the horizon. This mode is never going to talk with this mode here. Right? That is the problem, because they are outside the horizon. This has never entered, and this is actually outside. So they never talked outside, and it has not even entered. So how are they going to talk? Never.
I think I know what you're asking. that air molecule and that air molecule aren't ever going to talk to each other, but it's really easy for energy from that air molecule to get to that air molecule
really quickly. Okay.
Whereas
like if you look
when
at the
they past. Aren't in each other's light codes, that will never happen. Like the photon from there won't ever get to the photon from there.
Okay, so I think like let us go forward because I have to do the full calculation. I intend to, otherwise it will spill over in the next one. I'm going really slow. But do you think I should go fast, or is this the right speed, or I should slow down? Sorry? I should speed up? Okay. I thought I'd finish in 2 minutes. Wait a second, 20 minutes now. Okay. Okay, so let us. So I told you like the co-moving horizon is 0 to t dt of at prime. So do you guys know Hubble length? Co-moving Hubble length. Everyone knows? Okay, let me. Hubble length is very simple. So we have the Hubble rate. Okay, Hubble rate has the dimensions of 1 over t. We are working with unit c equal to 1. If you want to construct a length, it is H inverse. If you want to construct co-moving Hubble length, it will be AH inverse. Because the co-moving Hubble scale will be AH. Okay, very simple idea. So let us rewrite this integral in terms of the Hubble length. So this is the quantity which we are interested in now. It's the co-moving Hubble length. Yeah.
So to do this, does A depend like monotonically on T?
Sorry?
To do this, does the scale factor have to depend monotonically on the cosmic time?
Why monotonically?
Well, like,
it just depends on time. I'm not making any assumption on the behavior of the scale factor.
Sorry.
Oh yeah, it actually maybe it has to depend monotonically on time in this case.
Like if you have a universe that recollapses, the scale factor I assume grows and then shrinks. And if you integrate, like for example, if you wanted to go to the end of the universe, you'd be integrating the scale factor from 0 to 0.
Okay, so I'm taking a flat universe. Okay, the flat universe is not going to recollapse. Okay. So actually, like I have to say, like the whole in all of my lectures, I'm going to take flat universe, except in the last lecture, if I reach there, where I'm going to take open universe. Okay. But all this can be done for other cases. Now, the significance of this quantity is that if you measure the co-moving Hubble length, then the things, if the two particles are outside the co-moving Hubble length, then they are not in causal contact today, at that particular epoch. So co-moving Hubble length is more like a local concept in time, whereas the co-moving horizon is a global concept because it's an integral. Okay, so there can be two particles which are outside the co-moving Hubble length, so they will not be in causal contact today, but perhaps they were in causal contact early on. We don't know, so it doesn't tell us anything about that. And now, like, what is the solution which we can think of? The solution which we can think of is that this picture is wrong. First of all, we all have to agree. This picture is not correct. And perhaps what is actually happening is that this horizon, which I had plotted, was much larger in the beginning. And how it can be much larger? It can be much larger if the Hubble length, the co-moving Hubble length, was much larger in the beginning, so that it contributed to this integral more in the early times than now. Now let us look at the behavior of the co-moving Hubble length, and then you will see. What I'm trying to say. So the co-moving Hubble length is also very easy to calculate. So we can take, let us just consider what is AH inverse. What is this quantity? How does it go? Okay. So let us write A as A naught. So wherever I write A, is a function of time. So don't think it's a constant or anything. It's 2 by 3 1 plus W. And now we can easily compute
what happens for W equal to 0, which is dust. So for dust, we have A proportional to T to the power 2 by 3. We have the Hubble rate, which is proportional to square root of energy density. We are just using Friedman equation. Everything is constant except rho. So h square is proportional to rho, and h is proportional to rho to the power half. And rho for W equal to 0 goes as a to the power minus 3. Because rho goes as a to the power minus 3, 1 plus w. W is 0. Okay. And this is then going as a to the power minus 3 by 2 for dust. And then you can find out that ah is proportional to a to the power minus half, which is actually the opposite power of commoving horizon. So ah inverse goes as a to the power half, which is exactly the same power as the commoving horizon, if you remember, which we erased. So my claim is again the same. If you have matter which satisfies strong energy condition, its commoving Hubble length, which is ah inverse, is proportional to a positive power of a. If the matter violates strong energy condition, it will be opposite. It will be proportional to negative power of a. So if I have to plot, again, the same diagram, but now for the Hubble length, so let us say some scale factor a here and the co-moving distance here. If I have matter which satisfies strong energy condition, then it will go like this. If the scale factor decreases, co-moving Hubble length is going to decrease. Exactly same as the co-moving horizon. So it's not surprising because it's only the integral over it. If I have matter, let me draw this diagram on this side. So the same plot. If I have matter which strong energy condition is satisfied, then it will go like this. If I have matter with strong energy condition is violated, it will go like this. Okay? So it's exactly same as co-moving horizon, which we did. Is there any question here? Shall I derive this?
So you're plotting?
I'm plotting AH inverse. AH inverse? Yeah. Well, that's just an example.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I'm just showing that for dust it goes as positive power of a. Yeah. So it doesn't mean that it is for dust. It is for any matter or combination of matters which satisfy strong energy condition. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. This is very important. Like this is now we have a solution of the problem here. The solution of the problem is that we have to join both of these diagrams. We have to erase this line from here and bring them closer. Well, it's difficult now, but let us say it was something like this here. A is not going to 0. Something like this. So if this was the diagram for the universe, then we are done. Then we have solved the horizon problem. This is A. So we live in a universe. 20 years ago, people thought that we live in a universe which is just made of dust and radiation. The Hubble radius, the co-moving Hubble radius decreases like this. They looked at CMB, they considered some modes here, they were outside the horizon. They said this is a problem, this is a horizon problem, they cannot be in causal contact. Okay? But if there was a phase in the early universe where strong energy condition was violated, so here SEC is violated. That is why it is very important to understand energy conditions. Here SEC is not violated. Okay, if the universe didn't have this part, then you have to, and if you believe in Einstein field equations, then there is no solution to horizon problem. Okay, in my last lecture, I'll point out two other solutions, but let's not talk about them. We are doing conventional cosmology now. So if we believe in Einstein field equations are valid at all times, and if the universe had just this part, then there is no solution. But say if this is allowed, the strong energy conditions violation is allowed, then this mode was actually here, inside the co-moving horizon. And that is why it was in causal contact with all other modes. So now you pick any mode sitting here of any wavelength,
if you wait long enough, or if the inflation, this is essentially the phase. This is a phase of violation of strong energy conditions. So if this phase lasted long enough, that is, it went up and up, then this mode was always in causal contact. That is the idea of how we solve horizon problem. Are there any questions here? Do you understand everything? OK, good. So the solution is really very simple now. So let me, actually, like I have, I think I've done everything. Now let us compute this number. Now the question which we want to ask is the following. We want to consider modes which are of the size of the Hubble length today, okay, which we see in the CMB. We want to ask, so let me erase this line for a moment, okay? So let us say somebody comes and says that there was a phase of accelerated expansion in the early universe. The question we want to ask is how long this accelerated expansion lasted, or how much accelerated expansion is required. So we are going to consider modes, let us say today, these correspond to the H naught, A naught now, here. So the modes which are as large as the Hubble scale today. And now we have to ask the question that from the end of this accelerated expansion here, how much do we have to extend this line from here that this mode was inside the co-moving horizon early on? Okay? This question is equivalent to asking how many E-folds are required from the beginning of this accelerated expansion to its end so that the modes are in causal contact, which we see for the Hubble scale today. Okay? So we are going to compute that number now. How many E-foldings are there? So I don't think you have been introduced to the concept of E-folding. Do you know E-foldings? OK. E-folding is a very simple thing. So suppose that you have, suppose that the scale factor of the universe was A initial here, OK? And the scale factor of the universe here is AF, A final. And then just take the log of AF by AI, and that is our definition of number n, which is number of E-foldings. Okay? So now we have to ask the question that how many E-foldings happen from here to here such that the modes which had the length, the co-moving length equal to the Hubble scale inside the co-moving horizon in the beginning here correspond to the modes, the largest modes which we see here. Yes?
So now we're still going to be strongly dependent on the number of E-foldings, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You're completely right. So this is actually a weakness of the whole paradigm. I'm not going to define inflation because anyway, there are so many weaknesses. But let us study. Unless we will study these things, we will not improve on them. Okay? So it is completely right. The number, there will be a strict number which will come out from all this calculation which you are going to do. It is going to use some other things also, of thermal history and so on. And you're completely right, which we'll do in the tomorrow's calculation, that it will severely restrict what is your parameter, for example, of the mass of the scalar field. Okay? It's very tight, everything. And what people are doing these days is that from the CMB, you can actually rule out various models which propose to do that. Okay? You can by 2 sigma and so on. Okay, so let us do this. Actually, you'll need some parts of this calculation in today's tutorial, but David has already solved that independently for the open, for the flatness problem. So even if I don't finish, we'll carry out tomorrow. And the way I will do it is slightly different from the way David has solved the flatness problem, so it is worthwhile. So now there are some things which we will need in this calculation, because this calculation will require knowledge about thermal history, which I don't know like how much in detail you guys have done. So some things will just come out from the hat, some numbers, not the equations. Okay, so some phenomenological numbers will come out. I'll just plug them in to get the final numbers. Okay. Okay, so let us consider a mode
So what we want to consider is some mode here corresponding to wave number k or wavelength lambda, which is equal to the Hubble scale AKHK, co-moving Hubble scale AKHK. Okay? And our point, our task is to find this ratio, k by a naught h naught, where a naught h naught is the Hubble scale today, which we find. What we'll do later on in the calculation is to put this denominator equal to the numerator, and that will give us the number of E foldings required such that this mode corresponds to the largest mode which we observe today. Okay? The idea should be clear what we want to do. So let us first define, before that, let us first define the number of E foldings which occurred. So you see, inflation can even long could have been occurring before that. So what we want is the number of E foldings which occurred when a particular mode had this relation equal to k equal to hk from here till the end of it. Okay, so we are not going to compute n completely. What we are going to compute is n for a given mode, nk. So e to the power nk is defined as a final or a end of inflation is same as af, a final here, divided by ak. It's the same. I'm just taking this expression and taking the exponential. Okay. So we are interested in k by a naught h naught. So let us write it as akhk, which is the definition of k by a naught h naught. And then I'm going to do some juggling of the fractions. So you have to see it carefully. So I'm going to write akhk in terms of a end, h end. Okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to write e to the power minus n. I'll drop the bracket k here. So and I will write it as a n divided by a equilibrium. I will tell you what I'm doing right now. Okay, so what I'm doing is the following. So I'm going to write down this ratio as the as multiplication of ratios of different epochs. So we are going to assume that there was some inflation which occurred. So here we are just going to use the concept of inflation. So details are not required. We'll do it tomorrow. So there was some inflation, and then there was a period of radiation domination immediately after inflation. And then when the matter radiation equality was satisfied, immediately after that there was matter domination. These are the epochs we are considering. So that is why we have AKHK written as e to the power minus n a n. And then I multiply and divide by equality. And then I multiply and divide by HEQ. I'm going to write in different phases, because it is not that from here till here there was only inflation. There was different thermal history of the universe. First there was inflation, then we'll also do reheating, but I'm simplifying here. First there was inflation, then there was radiation domination, then there was dust domination, and then we see the mode today. So that is why we have divided in this part. So is there any question here? Yeah.
So here we're exponential, because vacuum has to get that sort of concentration.
Which exponential?
This
n is the definition. This has nothing to do with inflation.
But why are we defining it like this?
Oh, this is the definition. This is the convention. Like, this is equivalent to asking what is kilogram. So this is the number of E foldings. This is the definition. Even if there is no inflation, you can talk about how many E foldings happened in the dust dominated universe from the beginning to now. You'll get a very small, not as big thing. Yeah.
Sorry, just to be a little fairer to Alex, you could also say magnitude is logarithmic, because that's just the definition. But that's not really the reason. The real reason is that, you know, like, the human eye sees star brightness on a logarithmic scale. So, like, there is like, another way to ask this is the historical reason why we use this definition because we think inflation is caused by the Scalar field?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
So maybe there is a reason, but I don't know. Okay, but this is essentially, I think there is another definition which is in the SI units, which is called NAPER, which is equivalent to, which is related to this E foldings. But cosmologists prefer to use E foldings. Okay? So now I'm going to put some numbers in. I'm going to show you now, like, or maybe I'll show you tomorrow, but you have to take this as a fact for a moment, that A equality, H equality by A naught, H naught, actually you can also do this very easily, is 219, the value of omega matter today, times H. You know small h, right? And this is omega matter today. So this is, actually you can derive this from the thermal history. I will derive it anyway. I don't think I have time today, but I will derive it tomorrow. Then you can also use these numbers, which I think these numbers are anyway useful for you in the tutorial today. So we can take H equality as 5.25 into 10 to the power 6 H cube. And H naught M Planck, where M Planck is 1 over G in our units, 1 over square root of G. Okay, so this is the one, this is one fraction which we need here, which is HEQ by H naught, AEQ by A naught. Okay, this is one part which we need, which comes from the thermal history. Just take this number right now, just write it in your notes, we will derive it. Maybe today or tomorrow, let us see how it goes. Okay, so let us, we need another thing, which is the HK. So let us assume that this accelerated expansion, do you have some question? Yes. That is very important, to, that is eventually related to how we get 64. But this is actually a number. It's a empirical fact. So I'm not putting it by hand. So I think, like, let us assume that the accelerated expansion is caused by a field whose kinetic energy is very small compared to its potential energy. Okay, we saw this yesterday. If the kinetic energy of the field is very small compared to its potential energy, then equation of state approaches minus one. So let us assume. And this is what is going to happen in inflation. So we are just doing inflationary model now. So if you have that, then actually you can write that HK corresponding to this K here, HK square when the inflation was happening, should have been exactly 8 pi G by 3 rho. And rho is 8 pi G by 3 phi dot square by 2 plus B. And if we are assuming that phi dot square by 2 is very small compared to V, then we can approximate this expression as 8 pi G by 3 Vk. And essentially what I'm working in the units is G as 1 over Mp square. So it's 8 pi by 3 Mp, the Planck mass square Vk. Okay. So this is another thing which we are going to use. So we are going to use the, another expression. We are going to put all this together. And then we will get the right answer. And this is what you have to do in the tutorial also today for the flatness problem. But I don't know the way David has done, so maybe he has done in an easier way. So we need this. One ratio is here. We have one HK also with us. Let us fix the other things. Okay, so what do we have? An by okay, so what do we have? Yeah, just wait. Let me rewrite this as. Sorry, you have a question?
I'm sorry. I'm just curious as to whether or not the K over A delta H delta should be equal to 1.
we'll put it. Just wait. Like we are at the moment, we are computing the for any mode which has AK, HK. Later on, we'll demand in the end of the calculation how many foldings are required such that this mode corresponds to the largest scale that we see today. Okay. Okay. So let me write K. I'm actually myself confused with these fractions. So K by A naught H naught is e to the power minus n. And let us write A n by A equality. Good. Then we have A equality, H equality by A naught H naught. And then we have HK by H equality. Right? Yes. Okay. So does everyone agree till now? Okay. So now let us compute NK. Or let us compute N. We'll just take the log of this. But we have to remember one fact. So A n by A equality is the period in which there was radiation domination. Okay? So radiation goes as rho, as A to the power minus 4. So we are going to use this in the next step. We are also going to use this. And we are also going to use this. I will derive this. If not today, I will derive it tomorrow. You just take it right now as it is. So now let us compute N. So N will be minus log K by A naught H naught plus 1 by 4 log. This comes from here. So you have to play with this fraction. Write down, assume that there is only radiation in this phase from A n to A equilibrium. Rho goes as A to the power minus 4. Find out A n by A equilibrium in terms of rho equilibrium and rho n. And when you will take the log, the 1 over 4 factor will drop out. Do you understand, everyone? Okay, good. So this is one. And then the next thing is log of 219 omega naught h. And then the next thing is the last thing, which is this quantity, for which we use this quantity here. And we get log of square root of 8 pi vk 3 mp square 1 over h eq. Okay, do you understand everything? So now we have to just compute this number. So once we compute this number, we know the n. So now let us put k equal to a naught h naught, because we want the mode to correspond to the largest scales which we see today. Let us do that. And let us also put, and let us also say that vk, so since it corresponds to the largest scales which we see today, I will relabel vk, because k is going to disappear, as I'll just define it as v horizon. So the largest scales which we see in the horizon today. It's just a redefinition. There is nothing else here, okay? So then n is, n can be written as 1 over 4 log of rho equality. And I have to assume some of the things here. So, okay. I'll explain it. So V horizon plus log pi. I'll just explain. And if you compute this number for h equal to 0.7 and an omega naught equal to 0.3, then this number is 3.83. if you just take the log of this number, plus 3.83. So we are going to take H as 0.7 and omega meta naught as 0.3. OK? Now let me explain this, how it comes. So what we are doing here is that we had this rho n. Rho n is half phi dot square plus v. Phi dot square is negligible, so there is just potential. So there is, it should have been this. We can. What we are doing is that the potential is very flat. I'll explain that to you tomorrow, why it is flat in the inflation. That it is very flat. We are approaching almost Sitter phase. And the potential doesn't change from the beginning to the end of the inflation. So I could have written down this as vk here. And then what I'm just doing is I'm redefining vk as v horizon, because I want the k to correspond to the scales, larger scales, which we see today. Yeah.
So is this rho a scalar field, or is rho a photon?
No. This is the energy density of the universe. OK, good question. This is the energy density of the universe when inflation ended. OK? What we are doing is a simplified analysis, in which we are assuming that as soon as the inflation ended, there was radiation domination. This is not strictly true. If you make models of inflation in detail, there will be a reheating phase, which we are taking, which we are putting under the carpet. So what I want to say is that there was inflation. Co-moving scale was going like this, a co-moving horizon. And immediately after that, when this corresponds to rho n, there was radiation domination. So the radiation domination is from rho n to rho equal. OK? So this fraction corresponds to that. But the initial conditions for the radiation domination are given by the final conditions of the inflation, in which we are assuming there is a potential. Okay, that is why there is a Vn, Vk. Are there any questions here? Now it's just basically we are just going to do some. You are just putting some numbers. There is no deep physics here. Okay, so we have this expression. And now let me rewrite it in, like, since I'm quite terrible sometimes, so let me do it very, very slowly. So let me rewrite first this part. I'll use the Friedman equation for this thing here. I'll use that h squared is 8 pi by 3 mp squared rho for the numerator. So if we do that, then we'll get 1 over 4 log 3 mp square by 8 pi h e square v horizon. And then we'll get the same thing here, these two numbers. And then we can expand the whole equation. And what we'll get is 1 over 4 log 3 mp squared by 8 pi plus 1 over 4 log. You can actually do it yourself, but let me just write that so that we don't miss any step. And then similarly, so we are just using the rule for logs. Nothing else. We are just writing these as, if it is log of a times b, it is log of a plus log of b. And so on. So you should also check whether I make any mistake here, OK? So finally, the answer which we can get, which we get is this, 1 over 4 log 8 pi by 3 mp squared plus 1 over 4. OK, so now what you have to do is you have to, this is very easy to compute. This is this we will keep till the end. And this we can compute from H equality here. So just put the numbers. H not equal to this, omega m as 0.3. And we have just this expression, which we have to think about. Rest everything we have in terms of the Planck mass and the numerical factors. So my claim is, which you should check, that n is actually 1 by 4 log 8 pi by 3 plus 63.3 plus 3.8 plus 1.4. The 63.3 comes from this quantity, H equal, which had H naught, which had 10 to the power minus 61. So that is why we get such a big number here. And these MP4, which is actually present here, this is MP square coming from here, and there will be an MP square coming from here. Okay? So that is why we get an MP4 here. So this is the answer. So essentially what we get is 68 plus 1 over 4 log VH. Yeah.
3 MP squared over 8 pi?
It is, okay, 8 pi by 3 we have computed. It comes out to be some number.
And
MP squared?
And you have a log of MP squared over 8 pi, and then you have a log of 8 pi over MP squared.
Yeah,
so combine those together?
They will cancel out from here with each other, okay? You have to do it, sit down and do it. But MP squared is going to remain in the end. And you sum all MP squares, it will become MP4. And you will just get this, MP4. So this is the final answer, well, the semi-final answer which you will get. We still have to compute this, but I think let us do it tomorrow now. This is not a big number. This will be of the, this will actually turn out to be minus 5. So the answer will be 63 and 64. You'll have to do a similar calculation. I don't know how you have done for the tutorial, but it's very similar. At some point, you can put the ratios and so on. The basic point is that we started with this, okay, k by a naught h naught, and we wrote it in this form, and then we made it as a function of the number of e foldings, and then we have to use some facts from the thermal history. We cannot do without that. That will be extremely unfair, and maybe we'll get a very wrong answer. So we have made some assumptions here. But eventually, we are able to settle using this, which we learned from the thermal history, this number, and this from the data. We can see that we are reasonably close to the answer. So tomorrow, I will show you like why this quantity, how this quantity by observations turns out to be actually minus 5.2 or something. And so we get around 63, 64. E foldings. So the answer to the question that if we want to solve the horizon problem, essentially what it means is that we have to have a mechanism such that the largest modes which we see today in CMB were in causal contact in the very early universe. We saw that we can do that if we have accelerated expansion in the very early universe. Now the only question is how much should be this accelerated expansion? How long? And the answer is this, 68 plus this. Now, this depends on the potential of the model, right? This is where the inflationary potential will come. This will tell us about the slope and so on. So this is where the details come of the inflation. And this is what restricts. So for different potentials, you will get a different this ratio. But this is essentially the same. OK, are there any questions? Yeah.
So there we assume that our quantum field has variable kinetic energy.
Yeah.
Reason for that besides making the maximum?
We'll show tomorrow. So in the inflationary models, it turns out that it is so. Like the inflationary models we have, the kinetic energy is very, very small compared to the potential energy. So we'll do those details tomorrow. So there are some details which I have not covered today. So we will derive this tomorrow. Actually, you can already derive it from perhaps Niyesh has covered some thermal history. And this is just putting in some numbers here. And well, this is a fact, and this is the motivation for inflation. This is where the inflation comes in. There is very little kinetic energy. Okay, are there any other questions? Yeah? No? So have you understood everything, or you're not asking because you don't want to ask? Okay, good. So unfortunately, I was not able to finish it today. We'll first fix this tomorrow. What is this number? It's very simple. Then we'll do this, and then we'll go to inflation and see like what exactly are the inflationary models, what is slow roll, how do we like how do we actually justify this, and how the disinterface happens, and so on. Then let us see.